Dan Celia.
I want to be a nation that is on the biblical principles and the values and the ethics that are found in Scripture.
Your personal economy.
Financial issues that you need to know.
Aligning reality with truth.
But I think it's time we ask ourselves if we still know the freedoms that were intended for us by the founding fathers.
Now, here's your host, Dan Celia.
Welcome back. Financial Issues, 844-707-5533. Well, I want to thank everybody that participated in our campaign with Preborn. It's not over yet, folks, but let me tell you, we have reached our goal. We did it in very quick order, but here's what we want to do, because I committed to everybody that we are going to go till Mother's Day, and I want to go to Mother's Day, and if we go to Mother's Day and we continue to save the lives of babies through Preborn, and for every $28 that you sponsor an ultrasound, what we want to do. So here's what has happened. And let me just recap this for you, because it is absolutely amazing. Right now, as we speak, there are no centers waiting for an ultrasound machine so they can begin giving out sonograms and the scans that they do. They can begin doing that. No centers. Now, there are centers in the process of qualifying to get onto the waiting list for a machine. But there was a generous donor for every 100 scans that were sponsored at clinics. For every 100, they donated a machine for a center that was on the waiting list for a machine. There were 10, means we had to get to 1,000. We got to 1,000 on Thursday night, and we're over that. I don't know what the number is now, but we're going to keep going to Easter, because what we want to do now is jumpstart. And I'm only doing this because I wasn't expecting to reach the goal. And here's an opportunity. I committed that we were going to do this to you. I said, we're going to do this to Mother's Day. This is going to be a Mother's Day to remember, both in glory and here, for all the lives that will have been saved in 2019 as a result of this Mother's Day gift that we are making. $28 sponsors a scan for a young lady in one of the Preborn centers, okay? So now we've got 10 new centers online. They're not necessarily new centers to Preborn, but now they have an ultrasound machine, or are getting one. And we want to supply each one of those centers with 150 sponsors for each one of them. If we do that, that's going to give them an amazing jump start. They're going to be able to go out all the faster and hire the personnel, the registered nurse, and other things they need in order to start doing these scans without getting in the hole. So we're going to keep this going, and we're going to make this a huge, huge Mother's Day gift. We are going to be saving the lives of countless, thousands and thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands over the next 15 years. And so we want to give these centers a huge shot in the arm by continuing to sponsor. And the sponsorships that we do now for these ultrasound scans for $28, what we do is going to go to those 10 centers that for the first time now have an ultrasound machine. So we want you to mobilize now. Maybe you're planning on giving again next month, and maybe you can do it now, because this is still more than a one-for-one match. So this is an amazing match, but we want to make sure that we do our part for this in a big, big way. So I'm asking you that you would continue to pray about, continue to feel that nudge from God and be obedient if you do, to even sponsor one ultrasound scan. It's $28 to do that. So you can sponsor five of them for $140. You can dial pound 250, that's the phone number, And you can go right now and sponsor just one for $28. That would be such a blessing, or anything in between. So, or more, or whatever you want to do. And we sure would appreciate that. And we, you know, I had a longtime partner of Financial Issues write me an email last week and said that he was sponsoring 100 scans, and he was writing a check and mailing it in for 100 scans. So he wrote a check for $2,800 to sponsor 100. So that 100 got a machine for a center, just his check. I mean, what an amazing work that he is doing. And we're so grateful. And I imagine other people may have done that too that I haven't heard from. But we sure would love for you to come alongside us in this amazing campaign. We're going to go till Mother's Day. I don't even know when Mother's Day is. Does anybody know? Is it like 2 weeks? I don't know when it is, but we're going to go to Mother's Day, and we want you to be there with us, please. So we hope that you will go to preborn.org. Just go to our website, Financial Issues, and click on the baby bottle, and that'll get you where you got to go. Here's Craig Haggard with our Ag Report.
This is Craig Haggard right with your Financial Issues Ag Update. The markets were closed Friday in honor of Good Friday, and last Thursday's session was the typical slow session that we've become accustomed to ahead of a long weekend. The corn market ended the session virtually unchanged, with the spot month a quarter cent higher, while new crop futures were a half cent lower. Weekly export sales came in at 37.3 million.
Biz Talk Radio is experiencing a brief loss of audio from our program host. Please stand by. Biz Talk Radio is experiencing a brief loss of audio from our program host. Please stand by. Biz Talk Radio is experiencing a brief loss.
Trade spot soybean futures are trading 2 cents higher. The wheat market traded on the defensive, with Minneapolis hovering just a few cents above contract lows. The Kansas City September and December futures months made new contract lows on Thursday. The major problem is that global supplies remain high and export competition remains stiff. Speaking of exports, weekly export sales came in at 11.7 million bushels. That was right at the low end of their estimates, and certainly not a number that created any excitement. In terms of planting progress for spring wheat, South Dakota is working on melting their recent massive snowfall, while southwestern North Dakota and southeastern Montana are seeing signs of spring wheat seeding. I'm guessing that this afternoon's planting progress report will show between 5 and 10% of the spring wheat crop currently planted. In the overnight trade, Chicago is 2 cents lower, while Kansas City is a penny lower, and Minneapolis is trading a penny and three quarters higher. Cotton futures were lower, with May futures losing 80 points to settle at 77.31. In the overnight trade, spot futures were trading 16 points higher. Livestock futures had a good outing, as they were higher straight across the board. June live cattle were up 30 cents for the day, while the May feeder cattle posted a gain of 97.5 cents. On Thursday, we got the monthly cattle on feed report, and it placed cattle on feed at 102% of last year, with cattle placed on feed during March at 104.8% and cattle marketed in March at 96.6% of year-ago numbers. June lean hogs were 62.5 cents higher for the day. I saw an article in the South China Morning Post with a headline that read, "Not enough pork in whole world to fill China gap." In the article, they quoted experts who believe that China will lose over 200 million hogs before this epidemic runs its course. So you would have to think that pork prices have some more upside. Class 3 milk futures turned in another positive session. The June futures traded above the $16 level at one point before closing at $15.95. It was the first time that June futures had been...
For years, The opening statement in the Constitution of the United States says this, that we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty. I don't know what part of that we don't get anymore. That was written by men who cared about this country deeply.
Financial Issues with Dan Celia.
Welcome back, Financial Issues. I'm Dan Celia, 844-707-5533. If you want to queue your call, let me go to Cindy. Cindy's calling us from Mississippi. Hey, Cindy.
Hi, Dan. Thank you so much for your ministry.
You're welcome.
I became a partner about a month ago, and right after I became a partner, I opened up an individual brokerage account with E-Trade.
Okay.
And I have automatic amount going into that account every month. It's not much. It's just a couple hundred dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is, should I start using your asset allocation? Should I start investing immediately, or should I build up some before I actually start investing?
So is this going to be an IRA account of some sort, Cindy? Or is it
I think so.
Okay. I would probably, what do you have it going in, twice a month, like every payday or something?
No, it's just once a month.
Once a month, okay.
And it's only a couple of hundred dollars at a time.
Yeah, well, that's good. That's good. I mean, that's fine. I would probably wait until, like the end of next month. You know, and I think then take a look, maybe even the end of the quarter, which would be the end of June, and that would be probably better. And then take a look at my asset allocation model. So if you're going to use mutual funds, then you're going to look at the Timothy asset allocation model. If you are putting money in every month, which you are, then the asset allocation model for mutual funds like Timothy would work really well for you. But I would wait until the end of June, first of all, for two reasons. One, because that'll let you accumulate a little bit. Secondly, that asset allocation model is changing probably in about 2 weeks. That is going to change. So that'll get you off on the right footing there. And what a model are you using? How far are you from retirement, Cindy?
About 15 years.
Okay, so that's good. That'll be a great help to you. So so let's wait a couple more, let's wait till the end of June, and then that asset allocation model will be updated, and you'll be ready to go.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. I also wanted to tell you that I saw you when you were in Olive Branch, Mississippi. And your personal testimony was so inspiring to me. So thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for saying that, Cindy. I appreciate it. What a blessing.
Have a blessed
thank
day.
You. All right, you too.
Bye.
God bless. 844-707-5533. Boy, that is a blessing, and it's confirmation. You know, some of you have heard this, but I never would give my testimony for years and years. Number one, Cindy can attest to this. I'm not emotionally equipped to be giving my testimony, and I cut out a lot of it, even when I give it, but because of that. But I'll tell you a funny story, or a story that God used to really smack me across the head. I was in Rogers, Arkansas, and we were finishing up a town hall meeting. This was many years ago. It was a very large town hall meeting, 1,300 people or so, and we were there, and I stayed for really late. I mean, because there were so many people, and there was a group, about 200 people, 150 people that were still hanging around, and they were all sitting kind of, they moved in and were sitting around, and we're talking, we're just taking questions, and I'm answering. It was about 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. We're still going. And a young lady, maybe not even 30, I don't remember, but a young lady asked me about what was my testimony. So I hemmed and hawed, and I finally gave it, and I shared my testimony. And her and some others were visibly moved and were emotional. And I said, "Are you okay?" She said, "I'm so sad that all those other people didn't hear that." And it really, God just used that to just whack me. I felt like I was hit with a 2x4. And because I knew scripture. I know that we're supposed to give testimony to the things God has done in our life as a motivation, as a help, as a testimony to the power of God. And we're supposed to do that. And I always ignored it. I knew we were supposed to do that, but I always ignored it. And so ever since that, I can't ignore it anymore. And I have done that. So maybe you need a little, as hard as it is sometimes for some people, but maybe you need a little nudge. And that's what I needed, more than a nudge. And it was a great thing. So I appreciate Cindy saying that, and it's always nice to hear that somehow God has used what he's done in my life to maybe encourage some others or help some others, and that's a blessing. Let me go to Bonnie. Bonnie calling us from Ohio. Hey, Bonnie.
Good morning, Dan.
Good morning.
So am I going to hear your testimony if I listen to the live town hall meeting next month?
I guess. I don't know. I'm not making any promises.
Okay.
It's hard. It's easy for me to get out of it when I'm not looking into people's faces. So
Well, you can look the other way.
Yeah, I know. I should. Yeah.
Two questions.
Sure.
One is, I really would like to know how to move the stocks up and down on the portfolio tracker so that I can have like all my materials.
Yes. Yes.
Stocks together, and I don't know how to do it.
Okay. So when you look at I'm going to try to get mine up just so I can make sure I give you the right information. But so when you look at your portfolio tracker, at the very, very first thing you see on the, you know how you have a row. So at the beginning of the row before the symbol, there is a little looks like a diamond, but it's actually an up and a down arrow. If you click on that and hold it, you can move that whole column anywhere you want it.
Oh, okay. That's awesome. Okay, yeah, because I clicked on it, but nothing happened. I didn't hold. Okay,
yeah, you got to hold it, and then you just move it anywhere you want it. And you're wise to do that. That's how mine is set up in sector, and that's how you want it, so you can kind of see what that particular sector is doing. So then when you add something new to a sector, of course, it's always going to be added to the bottom. So once you add it, then you've got to move it up to where you want it to go.
Awesome. And then the other question is, and I don't know how, if you have time to talk about it or if you've talked about it before, but I know sometimes you mention valuations, and I don't really know what those are, and I'm going to go ahead and hang up and listen to that.
All right, great. Thank you, Bonnie. I appreciate your calling and asking that. So you probably help some other people. So
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. So I talk about valuations often, and not only me, it's not something that I just talk about. You hear it everywhere because most analysts are looking at valuations of stock. And so right now, so what that means is valuations are the percent in which a stock is selling for compared to the profits and earnings and value of the company. So right now, for instance, if you looked at all the S&P 500 stocks, they are trading at a valuation of around 16 or 17 times earnings, okay, on the stock. So that's considered a pretty average, maybe leaning to the high side of average. of valuations. Now, right now, we would say things are fairly valued in the markets. When that gets to be 18, 19 times, we start getting concerned. Now, it is difficult because stocks like technology stocks tend to inherently have higher valuations. So for that sector, normal valuations would probably be a little bit higher than what I said. For some other sectors, maybe like a material section, the valuations, or even energy, may be a little more normal, like that 16 area. So it really depends, too, on the kind of sector it is. So you would never, I don't ever put anything on my buy list for any one reason. And valuations are no different. I talk about them more as a general statement about the markets. Or I remember once in December, I had more than one conference call in December last year. And I remember in one of my conference calls saying that if you're waiting for something and waiting for a reason to get into the markets, I have no idea what you could possibly be waiting for. Because valuations are about as good as they're going to get for a very long time. And we have some incredibly well-valued stocks on the buy list. So if you're waiting, that's foolishness. Get into the market. Now, I've had a lot of phone calls from people saying, it was the best call I ever got, because best call I ever heard, because I listened and got into the markets, and it's been great for me. So that's what, you know, we look at valuation. You hear other people talk about valuation, but I don't make a decision on something being on the buy list. As a matter of fact, I looked at a stock this morning and a couple last night that were single-digit valuation, but they still weren't, they still didn't make it to my buy list for a number of other reasons. But it's not just that alone, but that's something you want to be concerned about more. You see a general overvaluation, something's wrong in the market. We got to be concerned. Welcome back, Financial Issues. I'm Dan Celia. I want to mention to you our live town hall coming up. So we have a live town hall meeting coming up on May. Anybody know when it is? May 11th. So May 11th, we have a live town hall meeting. So check it out. It is going to be, you'll be able to sit at your kitchen table and view a town hall meeting. And it'll be great for you. You won't have to, you can just relax. It's the first time we've done a live town hall meeting. It's for partners only. So if you're a partner, you want to come up. We're trying to get a handle on the cost associated with it and trying to figure all that. There was a lot of costs associated with it that little more than at least I had anticipated. But nonetheless, we are doing this for partners. So if you're a partner and you want to join a town hall meeting, you can do that from your kitchen table. So we hope that you will join us on the 11th of May. And it'll be a good town hall meeting. I'm sure we'll have a lot of fun. All right, something else I want to mention. I've said this about a million times over the years. I said it twice last week. I remember very specifically, and I'll say it again today. If a stock's not on my sell list, you don't need to feel compelled to sell it. But if I tell somebody that has given me a very specific set of circumstances and has asked me about a stock and I said to sell it and move it into something else, there is a very specific set of reasons that I have. In the case this morning, it was somebody that I happen to know. I know how old he is. I know where he is and all, and where he is. And he indicated that his portfolio was fairly strong and this particular stock was pulling it down. I said to sell it. Somebody immediately went out, looked for my sell list. This is not on my sell list. Didn't say it was on my sell list. If I did, I would have told everybody. As a matter of fact, not only it wasn't an on my sell list, it hasn't been on my buy list or sell list for a very long time. It is a hold. But if you want to sell based on what I said to this particular gentleman that you might be in the exact same situation, feel free to do so. But it wasn't a broad order to sell the stock. It was for this specific gentleman. So just thought I'd throw that out there because I know there's going to be a whole lot coming in about that. And there's a part of me that says I should never talk about any stocks because of these kinds of things. And then I say, well, that would be kind of boring. I should talk about some. That's why I did the numbering system. So it would be nice because I take away the numbering system. Then I don't have to worry about talk if I'm not going to talk about it. So anyway. And I know that some are speculating what number I meant to talk about, but I talked about the one that I meant to talk about. All right. 844-707-5533. Let me go to Jane. Jane's calling us from Indiana. Hey, Jane.
Hey, Dan. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My husband recently lost an aunt, and he apparently is going to receive a portion of her inheritance. So he had a bunch of red flags. He got a call the other day from Edward Jones, and I think maybe some of the money is being held there. Mm-hmm. And he was at work, but they started asking a lot of questions. Like they have his social number. They wanted to know how much he makes, his net worth, and it had something to do with the settlement of this estate. Is there any reason he needs to answer those questions?
No, none at all. And they shouldn't be asking those questions. They're out of line. And I would say to that Edward Jones rep, if you've got questions about the distribution of this estate, you need to talk to the executor. Is he the executor of the estate?
He is not.
Well, then they need to be talking to him. That's got nothing to do with him. So you should not give him any information. And how they got his Social Security number, unless he already has an account with them or had an account with him at one point in time, I don't know. But I would also call the executor and say, hey, you know, I don't want my personal information given out, especially to some financial person that's going to try to sell me something. I would appreciate it if you wouldn't do that. It is not the executor, under the executor's obligation to do that until such time as the people, the beneficiaries, sign off on that. They will get a letter from the executor. They should get a letter from the executor, whoever sat on the estate, if it's a law firm, signing off on any disbursements. The disbursements are not going to be made to any financial organization. They're going to be made directly to him. And that's the way it's supposed to be, and that's all that matters.
Yeah, what he thought. He ended the phone call pretty quickly. Turns out several of his siblings have received calls as well, and they all felt it was strange also. So they're supposed to call him back tomorrow, so I'll have him go ahead and call the executor at this time and get that cleared up.
Yeah, he should do
that.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Jane.
Thanks so much.
I'm glad you called. Uh-huh. Good stuff. Thanks. Bye.
You too. Bye.
Let me go to Jerry. Jerry's calling from North Carolina. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, good morning. I'd like to thank you for all the help you give us all.
Sure.
And I want to talk to you about the Tanger Outlet Mall. I don't know if your work pays a 7% dividend, and they've been around since I was a little kid. And I seen it go across the stock market channel the other day, and I think that'd be a good one just to buy for long-time dividends. What do you think?
Well, it's one that I have on my REIT list. I'm a little, it's not on my buy list, it's on my hold list. But you know, it really is a play on the economy. So if we think the economy is going to continue to be stable as it is right now or get better, then yes, I think it would be a good play. I'm not quite in that camp yet. I need to see a couple more things, but it is going to be very tied to the economy. So, but here's the thing. If you were to do it for income and you're looking to get that dividend, then I wouldn't have a problem with it as long as you don't get nervous when you see the value drop, because chances are the value could drop. And like every retail outlets, they're a little bit better than, say, a real estate investment trust that's involved in mall, you know, enclosed malls and different other kinds of retail outlets. They're a little bit more stable than that. But nonetheless, we have a very big Tanger outlets right very close to us in Lancaster. And we go there often, and there's a whole lot of empty stores. So those empty stores equate to obviously bottom line on the organization. So you could see value decrease if the economy worsens. That could be a bit of a problem. We are nowhere near the place of worsening. Worsening economy for places like that means that people are beginning to get laid off from their jobs. We don't have that problem. We have an opposite problem. We don't have enough people to work. But that's what would precipitate a bad numbers coming out of that. So for now, and even maybe the long term, if you're into income, if you're only doing this for the 7%, you're actually taking that 7%. That 7% is supplementing your income. Then I'm all for it. But if you're going to do it and you're going to see the value drop, so let's say what I mean by that is you put $20,000 in and now you've only got $16,000, are you going to panic by getting out, taking a loss and giving up the income, or are you going to say, hey, you know what, so it's down to 16, I'm not worried about it. It'll come back up. I'm still getting my 7%, you know, on my, you know, shares. And that's all I care about. And so I'm just going to keep getting my income. So that's kind of the mentality that you need to have when you're investing in some of those retail REITs.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot for your Dan.
You're welcome. Thank you, Jerry. 844-707-5533. Let me go to Kathy. Kathy's calling us from Oklahoma. Hey, Kathy.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Sure. I just wanted to check. I started kind of late in life on my retirement fund due to a divorce, and I had my money, started a 401k. I contributed the most I could at the time. Then after 17 years, I got laid off, so it had to be rolled over to a traditional IRA, and it's with Fidelity. I think they're great, and I had a representative that I talked to a few weeks ago. Most of my money, which we're not talking about a huge amount, but it's in contra funds, and he wants me to take it out of contra funds and do a account where I guess they watch over it, and they said on a regular basis, and they would probably charge me a fee to do that. I'm not looking at needing the money anytime soon unless, you know, something drastic happens, I guess. But I just didn't know whether to do that or not.
No, I would leave it alone.
You would leave it in the contra funds?
Yeah, I mean, they're not biblically responsible, so it's not one that I would recommend. But at the same time, you've been in it for a very long time. You probably have a pretty decent cost basis over the years in that. And they traditionally have a pretty good reputation. They do pretty well. And I don't know that now's the time to begin, you know, micromanaging what you have. I think, leave it sit or get to a place where you're moving it into more things that are generating income so that you can start getting more income or supplement your income. And you're probably not at that place either. So I would just let it.
The opinions and recommendations expressed by Dan are his own and do not necessarily represent the opinions of this station or any of the show's sponsors.
Welcome back. Financial Issues, 844-707-5533, 844-707-5533, Financial Issues. Great to be here. Still haven't got any housing numbers. I'll look for it at the next break, see if I can ground it up. It's got to be out there somewhere, but nobody's reporting it. Too much other stuff going on. They'd rather talk. They'd rather spend about 40 pages on Tesla than, you know, in the fire than anything else. Just, I find that amazing, but that's just the way it is. But I'll round that up for you in the beginning of the next hour. So we'll check that out and see where we are. 844-707-5533. Let me go to Donald. Donald's calling us from North Carolina. Hey, Donald.
Hey, how you doing, Dan?
Good.
I've heard you before, and I want to thank you, too, for everything that you're doing.
Oh, you're welcome.
I got a question here. I was working with a company so many years ago, and they went under, and they turned everything over to the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation.
Yes.
And my thing is that I was wondering, I had spoke to them, asking them about taking it out or, you know, rolling it over into something, but they said I can't and that I'd have to leave it until I'm 66. And my question is this true, or what can I do with it?
Yeah, so you can't do anything with it. So the PBGC is like, well, not really, but if you think of the FDIC, you see all the time insuring your money. It's a government organization or a government agency that steps in when a large pension fund or a large company, could be a large union pension fund, could be a large corporation, maybe goes bankrupt, out of business, and they come in and take over the pensions. And they really try as hard as they can to work with the money that they've taken over and then start to run all these calculations to see how they can best benefit the employees. So they all generally will look at monthly benefits. So at age 66, now this may not be the case in your situation.
Right.
So but at 66, they may say, all right, we're gonna give you, you know, $355 a month or $800, whatever it is. They're gonna give you X amount of dollars based on your portion or share of that pension plan, and they're going to offer you that. They might offer you a lump sum. They might offer you to take, you know, to take some of that lump sum. Not too likely, but they might. Chances are they're just going to offer you a monthly.
So I don't have an option as whether to get the lump sum or roll it over into nothing else to invest it with something else.
Well, I don't think so. There is a possibility, though, that when you turn the, how far away are you from 60 or that
I'm
age?
63.
Okay.
I'm 63 now. And
okay.
What I was trying to do, I wanted to start with it at 62. At least I thought I could, but.
Yeah. Yeah, they're going to hold that until full retirement in their actuarial calculations. And frankly, it's good that they do that. I mean, they need to do that to try to help all the employees get the maximum amount that they can get. You know, so they need that cumulative amount of money to stay in there as long as they can to hopefully generate some earnings and growth on that account. But they could say to you, you can have a lump sum, which means you can roll it over into an IRA account, or you have to take the monthly payout.
Okay. One other thought, too. I got $25,000 that I had extra, and I wanted to sort of invest it in something, too, as well. And I do, like I've heard you say before, you need to have something, because if you place something somewhere, you need to have something you can fall back on.
Yes.
I do have a little something to fall back on, but with the $25,000, I was just wondering, what do you think would be good for me to invest that in, that I could have some type of
sure. So I would tell you, Vince, based on Donald, based on what you already told me, was I would try to think about putting that money in some things that are going to produce good income. that are going to generate, you know, 5-6% income, 4.5-6% income. So I would be looking at some good solid utility companies, maybe a energy company, an oil company, you know, maybe four different companies, maybe five, if you did 5,000 in five different companies. And, you know, look at a utilities, look at an energy company, maybe even an industrial company that's paying good dividends, or preferred stocks that's paying good dividends. And, you know, actually take that income. I wouldn't want you to reinvest it. So you keep that money working for you, and you're taking that. You may get some growth too in that, you know, where you put in 5,000 in a couple years from now, 3-4 years from now, maybe longer, might be worth 6,000 or 7,000. So you might get some growth, but over and above that growth, you want to try to get some income on a regular basis to help supplement your monthly income.
So you're saying that I should separate it and put it so much into different ones instead of all in one?
Yeah, I would not put it all in one, because you want to be diversified, particularly in income stocks, for a couple reasons. One is, one of the stocks may stop paying dividends. They might decide, gotcha, we're not going to pay dividends anymore. So at least, gotcha, it's only one-fifth of what you have, so you can replace that pretty easily. But in the meantime, you're still getting the income from the other, you know, amount. So plus you want to be diversified in case the one you put it in might be the one that's not paying dividends anymore, and you got to move all of it in a hurry, and you don't want to have to do that.
Right. I really appreciate that.
All right. Thank you. Right. Thank you, Don.
Thank you.
All right. I'm
have
glad you called. You too. 844-707-5533. If you want to queue your call up, now's a good time to do it. We've got another hour and 10 minutes left, and we're going to stay with phones. And our lines are open, 844-707-5533. Let me go to Vince. Vince calling us from Texas. Hey, Vince.
Hey, Dan. How are you this morning?
Good.
Good. Thank you for taking my call. I'd like you to comment on a couple of things I have this morning. First of all, I'd like you to comment on the proposed legislation to 401k plans that is presently being proposed by at least one of the parties here in Congress. I'd like to see what your take is on all that, because it has to do with, it addresses rather, another question that I have. You have long been an advocate of going ahead and paying taxes on that qualified money before you get to that RMD stage, and I actually ran that proposition before my tax person. And I asked her, well, you know, how would this shake out? What would my tax burden be if I had to do it prior to 70, which in my case is 3 years from now? And I found out some interesting things. First of all, she told me that if I spread it out over 4 years, I could save about $150,000 in taxes. If I spread it out over three, I could save $100,000 in taxes. But if I went ahead and I paid it in one fell swoop, I mean, I'd get nailed big time. And yeah, so I took the value that is left if I paid it all in one fell swoop. If I took that value, I ran over to my broker and I said, okay, model this for me. What is the impact on my portfolio if I take this chunk of money out in one fell swoop versus letting it go 3 years or 4 years?
Well, first of all, I never, ever advocate to take it in one swoop. So I don't know if, I mean, if you may have thought you heard me say that, but I've never said that. I always tell people spread it out. Now, I might have said it to somebody that's got $6,000 to, hey, you might as well just take it and be done with it. But I've not said that on any kind of large lump sum. My strategy has always been that at a certain point, at a certain age, you should systematically withdraw a certain amount of money, and so that at the end of 20 years, the end of 10 years, 15 years, whatever, you're not going to have any more money in it. But do it on a very gradual basis. So I just want to make it clear to everybody listening, I've never advocated for taking it as one big lump sum. So, and I wouldn't do it In your case, obviously, you have a fair amount of money in there, and I wouldn't advocate that. So I don't even think it ought to be a question, because there's no way paying all that tax at one lump sum is going to be made up for in a short enough period of time to make it worthwhile doing it. And if they say it's going to be made up for in a short amount of time, they don't have no way of knowing that. We don't know what the markets are going to do. So you can base it on an assumption that whatever the portfolio is that you invest in is going to earn X amount of percent every year for the next 5 years. But man, that is really just an assumption, and is not something that I'd want to rely on. So you're going to end up in a situation where you're going to have to take some of those minimum required distributions, because you're not going to get it all out in 3 years. So I would just tell you to take it slow and easy and take a little bit out every year. And I would only take out what you're able and willing to pay in taxes and continue on that plan in the years to come. All right, I'm right up against the end of this hour, Vince. So I'm going to have to let you go, but I appreciate that question. Thank you. Folks, we'll be right back after this. But if you've got to leave us, remember, all that you have is his. Let's be a good and faithful steward. Have a great day. God bless.